This is Hear Me Out. I'm Celeste Headlee. We are looking down the barrel of a very, very close presidential election. And of course, we've all learned that polling doesn't necessarily predict the future. Longtime listeners will know how I feel about horse race journalism, but a close election feels like a safe bet. And as always, every vote counts. You've probably heard someone say, or thought yourself, that voting for third-party candidates is a wasted vote. They certainly can't win a general election, but was that ever the point?
We'd be better off with some form of multi-party democracy. But if we don't have that, my argument is that we need third parties to play this kind of disruptive role that they used to be much better at than they are today.
Bernard Tomas, an expert on third parties, joins Hear Me Out in just a moment.
Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.
Welcome back to Hear Me Out. I'm Celeste Headlee. 6 out of 10 Americans say we need a third option in the polling booth. Most of us are frustrated with the two-party system, but when people choose to vote for a third-party candidate, they're often accused of wasting their vote or taking votes away from the candidate they would likely prefer. It is a fact that third-party candidates can't win the presidency right now. It has been more than half a century since a third-party candidate won even one state in a presidential election. But does that mean those campaigns are a waste of time, money, and votes? Our guest today argues no, and that we need to change our metrics for success when we talk about third parties. Bernard Tomas is a writer and associate professor at Valdosta State University and an expert on the American third party, and he joins us now. Hi there.
Hi.
So third parties, as much as Americans say they want them, they also get very angry when a third party candidate takes votes away from the candidate they like. Tell me as briefly as you can, let's start off with just a statement of your opinion here. Is it just that third parties are necessary? What is it?
I would say the opposite. I mean, first of all, you're right. They can be spoilers, but I would say that they're more of spoilers with a purpose. They're supposed to be people who are pushing issues. But I would go so far as to say that U.S. democracy is actually dependent on strong third parties, and that one of the reasons why we're in the trouble that we're in today is because third parties are not as strong as they used to be.
I mean, I would agree with that. Let's start with this conversation by saying I agree. I wish we had multiple strong parties. We don't right now. And I would say that going back through history, third parties are often made up of some sort of rebel bloc from within either the GOP or the Democrats, right? Like, as soon as we locked into this two-party system, the third party almost always comes from a disaffected portion of one of the major parties, rather than having completely new ideas.
Well, it's sometimes comes out of the major parties. That's actually is true. I mean, the most important third party since the Civil War would easily be, in my opinion, the progressives. And they were people who left the Republican Party. So that certainly is often the case. Sometimes they come out of the workers' movement or labor movement or other social movements. So there are different places that they come from. But one of the things they have in common is, yes, they're challenging the major parties. And I'm going to agree with you back on something that in my ideal world, and I think at this point, probably most political scientists' world, we'd be better off with some form of multi-party democracy. So I can tell you all kinds of reasons why that's the case. But if we don't have that, my argument is the second layer is that we need third parties to play this kind of disruptive role that they used to be much better at than they are today.
Well, I mean, the problem is for me is that, you know, you look at, let's say you're a Democrat and you very much did not want Donald Trump to become president. Then your anger with the third party candidates who, you know, we know looking back that they did take a certain significant number of votes away from Hillary Clinton. And she lost not the popular vote, but the electoral vote by a relatively small margin. I mean, you can understand that kind of anger with them, in meaning that if we can't have a strong third party system, why bother with this weak tea that ends up spoiling?
Well, I mean, the problem is that if you don't have the third parties, if the system is moving in a destructive direction, it is going to keep moving in that destructive direction. You know, and its third parties have been a famous and important antidote, for example, to polarization historically. And, you know, the problems we have right now, the argument, and it's a good argument in many ways, is that, well, Donald Trump is a danger to our democracy, and the priority number one is keeping him out of office. And that totally makes sense. But here's the second point on this issue, that that if we don't actually focus on some of the structural things, it's not just Donald Trump. The entire Republican Party is moving in a direction that could lead us to bad Democratic backsliding. So there are larger issues. So yeah, it's scary. And I totally understand the concerns about that. I, by the way, don't think Hillary Clinton lost because of Jill Stein, but I don't think so either. But. Yeah, I know a lot of Democrats think that that's what happened, but I don't think so.
I don't think the evidence supports it. So let me go back then to, you mentioned the Progressive Party, and for listeners who are not political historians, the Progressive Party came from the Republican Party, Theodore Roosevelt. When Taft won the nomination, Roosevelt was ticked off. He founded the Progressive Party. He said that the GOP had conspired against him. He expected a lot of the Republicans to join him. They didn't. In fact, I think it was Henry Adams who said Roosevelt had cut the throats of the GOP. And this is another issue for me, is that the single most effective, maybe a successful third party we can think of in history, roused the absolute ire of the major political parties, and they worked to undermine Roosevelt. They tried to make it impossible for him to win anything. And I mean, that's kind of the state that we're in right now. The two parties have become so powerful that they can kind of trash any other parties.
Well, I think there's two points in that. One of the points we'll talk about is Teddy Roosevelt for a second. And, you know, Teddy Roosevelt, yes, this was a perfect example of Republicans leaving the Republican Party and trashing it and not actually winning very many seats. So we're not talking just Teddy Roosevelt. We're talking up and down the congressional line. We're all throughout the country, totally destroyed temporarily the Republican Party. But yeah. Let's be clear on what they destroyed. The Republican Party was very reactionary at the time, very controlled by a group of people, including someone named Joseph Cannon, who was as close to as an authoritarian as we've had in this country. And the progressives stopped that by attacking them and doing a lot of things, probably more than we have time to talk about, that really changed American politics. You know, a lot of things that we take for granted today, we can thank the progressives for. And it was all by them spoiling that election for the Republicans. And then the Republicans, I mean, let me at least step back a bit for a minute.
Okay.
And because we should get down the framework that how this kind of works. Right. So because it helps us criticize what's going today and also give a framework of why it's important. And it's this theory called sting like a bee. And the way sting like a bee works is that the third party, what it does is it focuses on some group that feels very underrepresented and finds some sort of galvanizing issues or themes to tap into their anger. And what they do is they use that to attack one or both of the major parties. So that's the stinging part, right? They go in. They don't actually win very much, but they cause the party all kinds of pain. And then what happens is, what has normally happened in this situation, is that the major party, now that it's losing seats, it's losing power, it sees the threat, is it then co-opts whatever issues the third party is bringing. And interestingly enough, then in American history, usually then the third party dies, like a bee dies after it stings somebody. So the bee winds up, or the third party collapses. But if you're looking at it in terms of policy, it's a major win because the major parties have shifted themselves, or at least one of them did. And so this was this set off a period of much more moderate politics. Now, I'll admit I've already forgotten what your second question was, but isn't it true that this is not happening so much today? And my research shows it really, the problems for third parties today ultimately come down to resources. And what I mean by that is you have other systems, other countries that run elections kind of the way that we do. But the critical difference between them and us is that they have public funding for elections. They have limitations on how much can be spent. And for us, what happened was when television and radio came along and campaigns changed the way that they ran, they went being from something that could be like a social movement and turned into something that required an enormous amount of money. And third parties have a very, very difficult time raising even small amounts of money. And they also don't have the kind of well-entrenched infrastructure that the Democrats and Republicans have. So they're really fighting from a very weak position now. And this is the reason why, even as the circumstances in some ways have gotten much better for third parties, on the other hand, they still are facing this giant limitation.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a break and then come back to talk about this more, because I have a lot more questions. I'm pretty skeptical of third parties right now, and I bet our listeners are too. So we're going to come back and talk more. This is Hear Me Out, a podcast from Slate, talking about third parties, and we'll continue the conversation in just a moment. This spring, you can have ready-to-eat meals that are delicious and enjoy a lot less stress with Factor. Every fresh, never frozen meal is crafted by a chef, approved by a dietitian, and ready to eat in just a couple minutes. You can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including a lot of really popular ones like Calorie Smart, Keto, there's Protein Plus, there's Vegan and Veggie. Also, there's more than 60 add-ons every single week, like you can get breakfast, you can get on-the-go lunch, snacks, beverages, all kinds of things that can really help you stay fueled and keep you feeling good all day long. So what are you waiting for? If you get started today, you can fuel up to reach your springtime goals. Now, I have used a lot of different meal delivery services, lots of them, and the truth is that honestly, it's a trade-off. If they're really quick and easy, you lose a lot of taste. But I tried Factor myself, and that is actually not true. They truly are quick. All you do is heat them up in a couple of minutes, and they taste good. They've never been frozen, so there's still crunch in the vegetables. There's a lot of flavor and seasoning. They really are good. You can get chef-prepared meals for yourself on the table in 2 minutes because they're ready to eat. And then you can get right back to what you love doing in the beautiful weather of the spring. If you want gourmet meals, you can try meals that have premium ingredients like filet mignon. They have shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, asparagus, so many incredible ingredients. Factor meals eliminate all the hassle of shopping, prepping, cooking, and cleaning up. Simply heat and then savor a truly handmade, delicious meal. We are celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Moon Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/hearmeout50 and use the code HEARMEOUT50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code HEARMEOUT50 at factormeals.com/hearmeout50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com, from the jury selection to the opening arguments to the witness testimony and cross-examination and the prosecution's case and the defense's case, and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.
And we're back. This is Hear Me Out. I'm Celeste Headley. And today we're talking about, are third parties worth it? And our guest today is Bernard Tumas, who says they are, and is making that argument now. So, you know, we've talked a lot about how weak third parties are and that they can't win. And that's something I think we both can agree on right now at this moment in history. We've also agreed that we really need them, that our democracy could use not just a third party, but I think a fourth, fifth, and sixth party. But you go a little further. You say that even now, when third parties can't win, even now when they often function as spoilers, you say they're still doing a valuable service to democracy. And that's hard for me to get my mind around. Like, what is the Green Party doing that is useful for our democracy right now when they can't win elections?
Well, I mean, the Greens are actually, if you're going to use an example right now, they're a very good positive example, I think. And the reason is, if let's take what's going on right at this moment or the last couple months, one of the big issues is the crisis in Gaza. And so We had the terrorist attack by Hamas, and the Biden administration immediately stepped on to the side of Israel, which one would absolutely 100% expect after a terrorist attack. But then Israel attacks Gaza, and it becomes into a humanitarian crisis. So what happened is that what the Green Party did, Jill Stein is doing, Cornel West is doing, is one of their big issues is that humanitarian crisis, and is attacking Biden from the left. And what that is ultimately doing is, so here again, this is a galvanizing issue. This isn't a galvanizing issue for everybody, but for a certain segment in the population, this is really important. So here it is. They're attacking Biden on this. Biden is shifting his policy, at least partially, because of the threat of losing voters to Cornel West or the Greens. and or having people who might have supported the Democrats not show up. This is a danger to him. So he is shifting policy-wise. And this has actually been one of the factors, I suspect, that has shifted U.S. policy on this issue. So this is an example of a smaller example. This is not Teddy Roosevelt-level example, but a smaller example of this stinging and of this co-opting. So that is kind of this issue, the Gaza humanitarian crisis issue would not be, I think, getting much play at all had it not been for the Greens pushing this issue and Cornel West.
See, I would disagree with that. I think it would still be getting plenty of play. I think that Democrats, many people in the Democratic Party, are angry. You know, we saw in Michigan during the primaries a large effort for Democrats who said obviously they would vote for Biden over Trump, but in the primary they wanted to send a message and vote for someone else so that Biden knew how strongly they felt about this particular issue. I think that would have happened, Green Party or no, Cornel West or no.
Well, I mean, I guess that's a point that we're not going to be able to resolve immediately. You are right that there was also pressure within the Democratic Party. And pressure within a party could certainly affect it also. But you got to consider that pressure inside the party was not going to affect him in the general election. So it was not a threat. I mean, there were other pressures that he had, too. There was also international pressure that pushed the U.S. In this direction. So I would not say that Cornel West and Jill Stein were the one and only reason why American policy shifted on this, but I still would argue that it was one factor. Bernie Sanders is not a threat to Biden winning re-election, but Cornel West, with the election probably being very close, might be.
Interesting. Why do you think Cornel West might be a threat?
Well, I think at this point, any of the third party candidates could have an impact, for the very simple reason that this election is probably going to be extremely close. And the reason I think that it's going to be very close is because basically this is where American electoral politics has been for about 20 to 25 years, since around the 2000 election. It has always been, with some small amount of exceptions, the Democrats getting slightly more votes, a few percentage points more votes than the Republicans. But the way they put it sometimes is, political scientists put it, is that the vote is not just polarized, but it's calcified, meaning it's not really moving. And so most voters are very set. And a lot of it is Republican voters, even if they're not happy with the Republican Party, they hate the Democrats. Democratic voters feel the same way about their own party. They don't necessarily love their own party, but they hate the Republicans. And so there's very, very little movement. So any stripping out of vote, this is why someone like, you know, RFK, who I think is unlikely to maintain the kind of support he has now, still could be a problem, though we don't know in which direction, because he may or may not peel enough votes away from Biden.
I mean, I don't think anybody thinks RFK in the general is going to get enough to spoil. But I think there is a faction within the Republican Party right now, which I think we could keep our eyes on, which is those who do not want the Republican Party to become the MAGA Party. And I wonder if they might split off into their own party, which I think could be interesting. On the other hand, oftentimes third parties are the most like single voter parties there are. Like oftentimes those are ones that are because they're disgruntled, I'm speaking in generally, because they're disgruntled, they tend to be even further to the extreme ends of the political spectrum than the major parties are, which means that oftentimes any support for them are people who, in at least in political circles, we wouldn't call reasonable, meaning they probably wouldn't be open to compromises. They wouldn't be open to negotiation. Can we agree on that?
No. The first one, I'm going to strongly agree with you. But let's do the second one first, which is our third parties always kind of on the extreme. That
not always, but generally.
Not that that was actually true post World War II. That was some because what happened was that the major parties in the middle of the century became very moderate, and really the only place for third parties to attack them was from the left and the right. But historically, in many ways, it was actually third parties could be considered, you could either consider them moderate or so disconnected in terms of where the debate was that you couldn't even put them onto the scale. So the third parties aren't necessarily very left-wing or right-wing. That's just a more recent kind of thing. And I think that's starting to change, will likely change. But here's what I really agree with you on. And I've written that because I've seen this dynamic developing already. We could go back all the way to the point where Trump was rising. Is this does look like around 1912 in the sense that you could really see a split within the Republican Party. That what's hidden under all of this is that the Republican Party is actually very fractured and really into two camps. The Republican Party it's been moving to the right now since the late 60s, but this movement in the MAGA direction has effectively left behind what we could consider like traditional Republicans or moderate Republicans. You could even say Reagan Republicans, and they're basically the Nikki Haley crowd. Then they're not strong enough. They dominated the party for years, and now they're not strong enough to stop Donald Trump. And so, to some degree, they're giving in to Donald Trump. But you can really see that underlying tension. So this is what we're in the middle of right now with the MAGA moving that far to the right has to break one way or another. One way or another, something is going to happen. One of the possibilities is the Republican Party, a certain segment, pulling off and running against it the same way the progressives did. Not the same ideology, but the same way. Or the other one is a third party coming in and claiming, and I'll tell you what I was thinking in a minute, but coming in and attacking them, claiming this is no longer a conservative party. We're actually the real conservatives, not the Trump Republicans.
Yeah, we're going to take another break, and this is really interesting to me. So we'll continue this in just a moment. This is Hear Me Out. I'm Celeste Headlee, and we will be back shortly.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
Welcome back. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is Hear Me Out, a podcast from Slate, and we're talking about the value of third parties. With me is Bernard Tomas, a political scientist who really likes third parties. And before we took a break, we were talking about the possibility that the Republican Party could have a schism, essentially, that we could see a break between the MAGA crowd and the never Trumpers, I guess. There was a lot of, Bernardo, there was a lot of sort of speculation when people thought Trump might lose the Republican nomination, it was put about that he might have become a Truth Party candidate. And there was all this speculation about what would happen. Now, that obviously didn't happen. And I think that a lot of people, including me, saw that as why third parties can't get anything done right now. Because the reason that it didn't happen in the Republican Party is possibly because many of those who would have voted against Donald Trump also see that a third party wouldn't win, and they want to win. Right? When it comes down to it, Mitch McConnell's going to support Donald Trump only because if he doesn't, you know, the Republicans might not win. I mean, that throws a spanner in the works.
Well, if you're talking about the politicians themselves, certainly one thing is that they're going to be hesitant in this situation to leave their party. I mean, you have a small group of people with a lot of courage who stood up to Trump, and they've all eventually just given up and quit. And so there's not at the moment at least, not a great deal of electoral incentive for politicians in the Republican Party to just say, I'm not going to be in this party anymore. Chances are that's the end of their career. So that's the part where it seems unlikely, unless something else happens at the district level or some other change comes. Right now, we're not seeing that. What I am wondering is I mean, I'll be clear, I'm not a fan of some of these groups that have presented themselves, even though no labels to me. I've always been very suspicious of. And have never understood, noticed no galvanizing issue, arguments along the lines of why can't we have a better candidate? Well, if by we you mean no labels, clearly not, because nobody would join them. There was nothing there. The Forward Party just seemed, I don't know, remember the Forward Party, maybe about a year ago they were big. They claim that unlike other third parties, they're not going to fail. And then they collapsed in maybe a month or so. And, you know, RFK is the same, but it, you know, we can talk about RFK if we have the time, but the thing is, what I wonder is whether or not the Libertarians are going to take a shot at this. We're hearing nothing right now from the Libertarians. This is the most silence we have in terms of what's going on. And I think the Libertarians could make a legitimate claim that they are more, ideologically speaking, consistent with traditional conservatives than the Republican Party is anymore. And, you know, what they used to call the country club type. And they can make arguments that speak better to it. I mean, just think in terms of like the way the Libertarians deal with the issue of abortion is their argument is, well, as a party, we're neither pro-choice nor pro-life on an ethical level, but we don't think government can handle any of these issues and should not be involved at all, which is not a very supportive statement about Dobbs. And what you see is a lot of people, including Republicans who are more moderate, who are now upset about the fact that Roe v. Wade had been overturned. Now, I will say, though, so here we have this opening, but I will say this, that reason why I'm not necessarily optimistic that's going to happen is because the Libertarian Party has a bad tendency to be kind of looking in itself instead of focusing strategically. They seem to not change their platform at all. And so I'm not convinced that they necessarily would do this. But this, again, there's at least an opening, big opening for them that could really be actually very good for U.S. democracy.
All right. So we've got about 3 minutes left. And, you know, I guess the last place I will go to, there's lots of other questions I could have. But the last place I will go to is in terms of whether the Constitution even supports a third party. I mean, there is an argument that because the Founding Fathers didn't really like pure democracy and they didn't want the popular vote, they created the Electoral College. And because it's the Electoral College that formally elects the presidents, that our whole entire system makes third party candidates unviable.
I don't actually think it's the system in that sense. I would go back to the argument that it has a lot more to do with the financing. The founders had no use for political parties, but they didn't even know what a political party was at the time.
Yeah,
and they also had no use for democracy. And then it just kind of happened against their will, really. But this, I think, though, is still, this is a system that simply evolved. Most of this stuff hadn't been planned. It's like we were the first democracy of its type, and nobody who was setting it up really knew what they were doing. And so whatever happened just kind of evolved on its own. So here we have the system that evolved on its own that winds up having two dominant parties. And because it's two parties, it also has this bad tendency to get highly polarized. And those are the moments when the third parties are most important. You know, the points where they were, you know, in the middle of the 20th century, when the Democrats and Republicans were kind of moderate and kind of working with each other, then it was maybe less important. But now is a time when we really are seeing a threat. And when those threats existed in the past, the third parties were the ones that came in and started smashing things. And that's smashing, you know, and here's the one I will say to Democrats is I totally get the concern of the third parties getting in the way of the Democrats. But the truth is, it's actually probably unlikely that Biden's election will be affected by a third party for a number of reasons. The third parties, the Greens, simply don't take out as many voters as the Libertarians. And RFK is all over the place and probably won't be that effective anyway. But once we get to the point that somebody actually goes after this giant hole in the Republican Party that you talked about, that's where they're going to wind up actually having an impact. But it hasn't happened yet. And what I'm seeing is underlying pressure moving in that direction. And I have no idea. It's like waiting for the brakes to, you know, if your car is failing, waiting for the actual thing to break. This is what's going on. I see these underlying patterns, and I guess we just have to keep waiting to see how this actually plays out.
Well, we will see, and I guess fairly soon. But I think it's a great idea, and you know, to go back to the things that we do agree on, we really do need third parties. However we get them, we really need other options. Bernard Tomas, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It was a lot of fun. I really appreciated talking to you, and I liked the back and forth. It was very enjoyable.
Me too. I bet you all have strong opinions about this. I wonder what you think, if you agree that we really need at least a third party in this country. Have you voted for a third party before? Have you gotten angry or felt that a third party candidate was a spoiler? We want to know what you think. Email us at hearmeout@slate.com. We love hearing your thoughts, whether you agree with our guest or not. Again, the email address is hearmeout@slate.com. We know you have thoughts to share. Keep them coming. Hear Me Out is a podcast from Slate. The show is produced by Maura Curry. Ben Richmond is the Senior Director of Podcast Operations, and Alicia Montgomery is the VP of Slate Audio. I'm your host, Celeste Headley. Until next time, speak your mind, but keep it open.